Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 2, Crowley Golden and the Isis Heart, a tale of Egyptian revival, written and performed for podcast by MJ Hahn. Good evening, welcome to episode 7, and thanks for tuning in. So, listeners, last time we checked in with Crowley, not exactly getting some clarity about Wilshire Sutton. Then we followed Mrs. Flack and Irving Bloom as they attended a rather shady news conference at the Legion of Honor, over which Tina Bleberman also happened to be hovering. After spotting a familiar face in the crowd, we left Tina in hot pursuit of the retreating figure of Audra Lamalle. That is, until Tina suddenly found herself being summoned. As we fade in, we find Tina arriving at her mystery destination. Chapter 7, The Demon and the Diphthong. Tina suddenly found herself standing on a concrete floor in the corner of a long, dimly lit room. In the flickering candlelight, Tina was able to see enough to gather that she had arrived at some sort of tidy workshop. She automatically reached out her scanner and was surprised when it snapped right back in her face. It was then that Tina looked down and noticed the strange pulsing hex mark that she was standing in. On the floor was a strange double circle of intricate symbols drawn out in red chalk.
Well, hello there, Miss Bleberman.
Suddenly aware that the silhouette in the shadows was speaking to her, Tina looked up to see the slightly trembling old man dressed in dark robes. He brandished a long wizard's staff marked with arcane carvings. Tina looked closer and suddenly thought that this guy's staff looked suspiciously like a pole cue. And then she caught a glimpse of a velour tracksuit under the imposing vestments. It was only Tina's curiosity that kept her from laughing in the little man's face.
Wow, that's some getup. What are you supposed to be?
The little man seemed unfazed. He gave the end of his pull cue a little flick, and the double circle suddenly began to crackle until it erupted into crimson flames. The little man's voice echoed off the walls of the tiny workshop.
I am the one who calls you by name. You submit to my will, the will of the one who calls you by name.
Tina scoffed, giving her eyes a purposeful roll. Without a second thought, she began to stomp her big boots across the burning symbols on the floor.
Is that right? Well, I've got news for you, crazy old geezer. Tina Bleberman doesn't submit to anybody.
The little man held his ground and brought the end of his pull cue down with a thunderous crash.
Tina Bleberman, demon of the outer circle. You are bound by Kirkendall's double detentionary.
That means you're staying put there, missy.
The double circle pulsed again, and this time glowing red undulating sinews lashed out viciously around Tina's ankles, pulling her back to the center of the circle. The little man made a satisfied nod.
I'm not as trusting as my grandson.
Tina's eyes popped with a sudden look of dawning recognition.
Wait a minute, grandson? No way! Your last name wouldn't happen to be Golden, would it? As in Crowley's crazy old grandfather? Psh, I don't believe this.
Silence, recreant demon.
Circles flared up again, and this time, Tina's tiara came to life with a flash of sparkling purple energy.
What's your call, demon, Gramps?
Tina's hands clenched into fists, and she began sending out wave after wave of burning violet fireballs. Sadly, they only seemed to bounce back against the circle's coursing boundary, surrounding Tina in a temporary cylinder of purple fire. Tina scowled when she saw that the circular inscription still held, apparently completely unfazed. She pursed her lips while she looked up and reassessed the little man.
What's it gonna take me to get out of this thing? I can't just hang around here all day. I've got stuff to do.
The little man adjusted his spectacles and smiled.
Oh, yes, that I'm not surprised. You've been busy lately. But for now, little demon, you're not going anywhere. Not until I get some answers.
Again with the demon crap. What's your problem?
Hmm? What's that now? Oh, perhaps you're not hearing the diphthong.
The what? What?
Grandpa Theo's wizardly ferocity calmed slightly.
The diphthong, dear. Not D-E-M-O-N, but D-A-E-M-O-N. Demon, as in djinn. A different tradition entirely. A spirit able to manifest on the physical plane and manipulate energies. You know, like the djinn in the lamp, for example.
Tina arched an eyebrow, suddenly smirking.
What do you mean? Like some kind of I dream a genie thing?
She folded her arms and made an exaggerated blink for emphasis.
No, not exactly. I'm not quite sure how it happened, but I fear that your present condition is at least partly my fault.
Tina tried to hide her surprise while her purple flames simmered around her.
And what do you mean by that?
I'm afraid that we have some unfortunate past acquaintances in common. Namely, Silas Filgrave and Desmond Derventer.
At that, the cylindrical purple inferno suddenly erupted around Tina again.
Those two? Are you kidding me?
Theodorus brought his staff down again, and the flames diminished, revealing Tina's expression, which was still shooting daggers.
Now just calm down a minute. You didn't let me finish. Those two hoodwinked me into helping them out, and I certainly didn't know what they were up to back then.
Tina remained stock still with her arms folded.
Sounds like a pretty flimsy excuse to me.
Well, there's really nothing I can say except that I'm sorry.
Great. Well, thanks for that. That makes me feel a whole lot better. Yeah, like I'm totally not dead or anything.
Yes, well, like I said before, I was unaware of that little detail. And I do regret my actions.
Tina looked thoroughly unconvinced while she motioned down to the flaming sinews that still had a death grip around her ankles.
And what about this crap? I suppose you regret that as well?
Yes, that might have been a little overkill.
Theodorus raised his staff and spoke a word. The burning manacles released their grip and vanished, but the double circle remained intact.
Tina Bleiberman? I've called you here today because of my grandson.
Tina paused a moment, looking confused.
What? Crowley? What about him?
Well, despite what he may think, he is a novice in the black arts. The formula that he's been using with such disregard could wind up getting him killed should he come up against a powerful entity.
Hey, watch it. I'm powerful enough to kick your ass, man.
Yes, I'm sure. I was referring to alignment, my dear. As in evil.
Well, I've had my moments.
Yes, but because of your unusual circumstance. An earthborn soul who survived being ripped from the physical plane only to remain earthbound and be affected by magics designed for evil spirits. It's unprecedented. Fascinating.
Tina looked a little lost.
So that's good, right?
Clearly you've never spoken to an actual demon. Their conversation is somewhat limited. Mostly it involves finding a way to escape the bonds of their protective circle and rend the magician limb from limb.
Tina slyly raised an eyebrow.
Careful. You're giving me ideas.
Nice try, Miss Bleiberman. It's true that you've been dealt a harsh hand, and natural demonic tendencies aside, I can tell that your humanity is still intact, and that you would never intentionally hurt Crowley.
Tina's expression suddenly lit up with a dawning realization.
Is that what this is all about? You just wanted to make sure I wasn't gonna wail on Crowley?
Theodorus gave a little nod.
Well, don't sweat it, Mr. Wizard. Of all the asses I plan on kicking, Crowley's isn't even on the list.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, and actually, if it wasn't for you butting in, I could be doing some prime ass kicking right now.
Tina began a sort of play-by-play, recounting her recent sighting of Aja Lamal at the Legion of Honor press conference. How her hot pursuit had been interrupted by an unexpected summoning. Theo's eyes popped when he heard the name.
Aja Lamal? You mean Derventer's sidekick? Nobody knew what became of her after the fire at the Curse Castle. She was just assumed dead.
Yeah? We should be so lucky. I don't know. She seemed healthy enough to hightail it out of there when she saw me coming after her.
Yes, no doubt. And what about the Derventer brothers? Did you see either of them?
Derventer brothers? What do you mean, either of them?
Well, I'm pretty sure you've already been acquainted with Desmond's twin.
Tina flinched, looking like her brain had suddenly stalled. It took a moment before the wheels started spinning again.
You mean the dude in the cape with the long hair on the rope ladder? DaVinci's twin? No way! There's two of them? Awesome. Sounds like another Ashes made my kicking list.
Yes, indeed. Crowley, in fact, had a similar reaction.
No way. That douchebag shot me with the same silver pistol. The whole exploding thing is really getting tired. You'd think they'd just give up already.
Theodorus's eyebrows twitched.
It's completely confounding. The phantasmal displacer's effect on you is somewhat temporary. This presents an interesting question.
Interesting? Gramps, when was the last time you got blown to bits?
Yes, perhaps I see your point. I wonder, perhaps we can help each other. First off, my name isn't Gramps. You can call me Theodorus.
He turned to face Tina, looking her square in the eye.
If I release you, do you promise to behave yourself? And by behave yourself, I mean not ripping me limb from limb?
Tina looked amused.
What? So now you're gonna trust the word of a demon?
As long as there's a diphthong in there somewhere. Yes, I think I am.
Theodorus lowered his staff and drew a slash across the circle's boundary. The crimson flames dissolved away, leaving Tina standing in a circular scorch mark. Theodorus placed his robes over the back of a chair and leaned his staff in the corner. He motioned across the room to a long work table.
Crowley said you were there the night of the Legion break-in? You might be able to shed some light on things.
When Tina followed, she couldn't help noticing the glass case sitting on the floor, or more importantly, the gleaming brass contraption inside. Tina's face lit up like it was Christmas morning.
Holy crap! I don't believe it! A freaking jetpack at last!
Theodorus looked over to find Tina hovering over the Dragonflyer with a look of pure delight. He chuckled and was about to add his usual retort about how the blasted thing never did get off the ground, when he noticed the strange blue-green glow coming from two canisters that he had stacked next to the Dragonflyer's case. His eyebrows twitched as he approached.
Interesting. Make that never did get off the ground yet.
Meanwhile, the gates of the abandoned airfield opened automatically to admit a single black town car. If you could see behind the tinted glass, you would note that the driver was a gleaming brass automaton with eye sockets ablaze with blue-green light. From the back seat, Audra Lamalle sighed with disdain at the sight of the dark clouds which are gathering over the enormous hangar in the distance. Overhead, the midday sun was gradually being obscured by an ominous storm which seemed to be rolling in from all directions. Raindrops began to speck across Audra's window.
This doesn't look good.
Audra steeled herself as the town car slowed, turned, and disappeared between the towering hangar doors. The sight of the bustling Shawapti inside the vast hangar reminded her of some sort of demented beehive. The town car drove past several Shawapti that were clustered under the Epiron. They glinted like dull worker bees in the dim light while they adjusted the ship's moorings. From the other side of the car, Audra could see that Mortmain's work area had been cleared away, now reduced to only a few piles of random scrap. She saw the Shawapti-driven forklifts moving the crude, blank-eyed iron guards up the loading ramp into the Epiron. Clearly, plans were moving forward quicker than she had anticipated. The town car eventually stopped in what had previously been a crowded parking lot full of limousines and delivery vans. Audra was surprised at the sight of her motorcycle sitting there all on its own. Well, not quite on its own. There was also the glossy black 67 Pontiac GTO parked next to it. Now, this was something that she hadn't expected. As the driver exited the town car, Audra sat a moment waiting for her door to be opened. Suddenly realizing that the Shawapti driver was walking away towards the airship, Audra opened her door and tottered after him.
Hey, you there! Just you wait a minute.
The brass figure spun around at once while Audra caught up.
What is the meaning of all this?
The Shawapti merely stared at her blank-faced. It was then that Audra remembered that since the Shawapti were clearly lacking any sort of mouth, she'd better take it up with someone who could actually speak.
Alright, show me the way up to Danilov's stateroom.
The Shawapti bowed its head and resumed its slow cadence up the loading ramp into the aft section of the Epiron. They crossed the vast cargo hold, which had previously been filled with limousines and delivery vans. Now it was slowly being filled with the hulking armored guard suits. Audra found herself clutching at the collar of her white mink as she passed the eerily silent figures. She never had cared much for the airship, especially now with all the recent additions. They were just a little outside of her comfort zone, which was considerable where Audra was concerned. The Shawapti driver led her silently to the elevator, where they ascended to the middle gallery. Audra finally arrived at Danilov's stateroom to find him languishing in the large porthole window. A recording of Foray's Pravan was being pumped in through hidden speakers, instantly giving the room a slightly lilting quality. Much like the upper gallery, Danilov's stateroom was full of 19th century furnishings, except here the walls were comprised of curved and riveted steel panels which seemed to be at odds with any comfort that the room might have afforded. In the far corner, a glass tank with iron reinforcements that was filled with an oily, murky liquid caught Audra's eye, especially the dark, tentacled creature that seemed to be idly swimming within. With a dramatic sweep of her white mink, Audra crossed the chamber towards the listless figure of Danilov.
Oh, now, now. What's all this, eh? And whatever is going on outside?
Audra's voice instantly shattered the serene atmosphere like fingernails on a blackboard. Danilov appraised her, looking a little weary.
What's that? Oh, the maestro is breaking camp and planning on going aloft.
No, I meant the storm clouds. You know, it's not quite as understated as a little fog bank.
Danilov turned his head and looked out through the glass. He could just see a sliver of sky beyond the hangar doors. He wasn't surprised by the angry gray clouds that had collected.
Yes, well, there you are. Looks like the maestro is having a moody.
Moody? That's putting it lightly.
Desmond had suddenly arrived on cue, just as a clap of thunder rang out in the distance. Danilov shook his head, chuckling to himself. Audra looked over at Desmond hopefully, ready to bait him into a little idle banter. But Desmond's small face looked too frustrated to notice.
Well, he went and did it just the same, despite our warnings, despite everything we said to him.
Danilov shrugged his shoulders.
I told you it wasn't worth bothering with. Mortmain had to learn for himself. Poor old fool was convinced that just because he'd finished all the armor suits, his work was done.
Desmond nodded, looking grave.
Of course, the maestro didn't exactly agree with this. They've been up there a while now. I think Mortmain may have gone too far.
Danilov threw up his hands.
Mortmain's just gone soft, living in his penthouse all those years. Him and his Frankenstein facelifts.
Here, Audra chimed in at once.
Don't knock it till you've tried it, Sherry.
I just meant he's been out of circulation for too long is all. If Mortmain's gonna be part of this organization, the maestro's gonna have to toughen up his resolve a little.
Danilov's eyes fell over Audra and Desmond, who both looked a little dumbfounded. His brows flickered and a little sneer crossed his face.
I suppose the same could be said for you two as well. The Empyrean isn't some fly-by-night way station for errant knaves and miscreants looking for a bit of kip, you know.
Audra adjusted the gold chain around her neck as if the weighty ankh that hung there had suddenly grown heavier.
You know, I have to admit, this entire atmosphere seems a little less appealing than it did previously. Plans changing without a word. For example, what happened to all the cars parked outside?
Danilov swung his legs around and sat with his back against the large porthole glass.
Plans haven't changed, sweetheart. They've just progressed. The maestro is a real stickler for efficiency. The cars were just a safeguard should he need them. But since we're on schedule, the maestro decided to lighten the load a bit. He let that Sutton bloke sell him off.
Audra's eyes lit up at the mention of Randolph Sutton's name, and little Desmond smirked.
Sorry, my dear, you'll have to behave yourself. Fraternizing between order members is, shall we say, frowned upon?
Audra rolled her eyes, looking deflated, and flopped down into a wing-back chair.
Blech, no fun at all. So what are we supposed to be doing then? Best I can tell, the maestro is returning to the skies until the big night, and we're going back to town. He's got us fixed up with a little place in the city.
Audra sat bolt upright, and Danilov moved his hand as if waving her enthusiasm away.
Now, now. Don't go getting too excited before you've actually seen the dump.
Audra's slouch returned with a little sigh. Danilov stood from the window and crossed to the tank in the corner. He leaned over and gently tapped the glass while he tutted.
We got to find a permanent home for our ickle baby here, don't we?
Audra looked over as if she hadn't seen the tank the second she had walked into the room.
Oh, well now, would you look at that? Sibel, I seem to recall that they don't like to be moved, huh? Only the females are delicate like that. Old Chaz here is tough as old boots. Only thing about the males, though, their skin don't do nothing for us. Only good for making him look pretty, eh, Chaz?
Danilov couldn't miss Audra's rapt attention in the direction of the dark, swirling shape. He reached to the top of the tank and retrieved a glass tumbler. He knelt down to the spigot fixed into the tank's side and filled 2 fingers' worth of the murky spirit into the glass.
Go ahead, help yourself. You're gonna need it, sweetheart.
Desmond's little face failed to hide its resentment as Audra accepted the drink and threw it back in one gulp. She smacked her lips as the sting from the liquid diminished.
You know, I think I prefer your recipe, Danilov. I could almost get used to this. Oh, and by the way, I had almost forgotten. I believe I saw our old friend, Tina Bleiberman, earlier.
Both Danilov and Desmond looked astonished and answered simultaneously.
Where?
What do you mean?
Oh, just hovering over the Legion of Honor during the press conference. I think she saw me, but I managed to get away. I don't know what happened to her after that.
Danilov set his glass down with a look of cold calculation.
We'd better prepare for every contingency if that blue-haired freak is flying around.
Desmond's eyes were still wide while he nodded in agreement.
She won't stop until she gets her hooks into us.
Danilov shook his head, looking unconcerned.
Don't worry, big brother. I've got a few tricks up my sleeve she hasn't seen yet. Oh, and by the by, Audra, how was your little jaunt to the junket? What are the cops saying?
Here, the familiar fire returned to Audra's eyes.
The morons haven't the remotest idea what they are up against.
Danilov nodded his head in agreement.
Ha! You can say that again. Oui. As usual, the local authorities are of no concern. Right.
The temporary mirth in the room was suddenly doused as the figure of Mortmain appeared. The air hung heavy with an awkward silence.
Sorry to break up the party, everyone.
Mortmain looked pale and sounded exhausted to the point of collapse. A golden ankh that hung around his neck seemed oddly shadowed against his chest. It was only then that the onlookers realized that the shadow was a dark and angry ankh-shaped burn that had been seared into his flesh. Mortmain's face winced every time the pendant touched his charred skin.
Hey, my friends, the maestro has a message to convey. His preparations have revealed an unfortunate miscalculation.
These words caused the onlookers to involuntarily tense up. Mortmain managed a little smile, and then looked pained from the effort.
Be assured, it's a minor mishap. He simply doesn't have all the components that are required for the upcoming ritual.
Danilov spoke up at once.
Oh, really? And what does that mean exactly?
It means that we'll be making a little night run to Kolma.
Danilov looked baffled.
Kolma?
Audra suddenly chimed in.
You mean that little town just south of the city? With all the cemeteries?
A little of the color had begun to return to Mortmain's face.
That's right. We're going to Death Town. It seems that we need to acquire a rather large quantity of graveyard dust.
Danilov's ennui suddenly seemed to have lifted.
Well, all right. That sounds like a bit of fun. When do we leave?
And so, Chapter 7 comes to a close. Special thanks go to our guest voice for this episode, Lisa Snare as Tina. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomtech.com. I'd also like to thank Random Coil UK for their cover of Satie's Nacian No. 1. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 8. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.